Good morning, and a very warm welcome to this Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks for June 29th, 2020. My producer today is Michelle Brathwaite, and as usual, we go up until 2 o'clock. But today we are going to start the program with a focus on Guyana. You'll also have the opportunity to participate in this program by calling us at 434-1790, or you can send your messages, your WhatsApp messages, to 266-4862. On March 4th this year, the head of the CARICOM Election Observer Mission, Cynthia Combe Martyr, gave the findings of a 17-member team that observed Guyana's March 2nd elections.
The mission concludes that the March 2nd, 2020 poll was free, fair, and transparent, and the mission expects that the results of the poll will reflect the free expression of the will and aspirations of the Guyanese people for a government of their choice.
For all the time that has elapsed between then and now, there is yet to be a declared winner. And many people across the region and beyond are confused as to exactly why it has taken so long and what are the issues on the ground. One aspect of the controversy is now before the Caribbean Court of Justice. And it has reached the stage where the outgoing chairman of CARICOM, Prime Minister Mia Motley of Barbados, has come under fire from some quarters for this statement.
The Caribbean community is concerned at reports that the chief elections officer has submitted a report to the Guyana Elections Commission, which is contrary to the directions given by the commission and which does not reflect the results of the recount process as certified by the very staff of the Guyana Elections Commission and indeed witnessed by representatives of the political parties. Indeed, these numbers and the certification of them were also witnessed by our CARICOM Observer team. They traveled to Guyana in spite of the pandemic and the risk to themselves, and they scrutinized the recount process. The CARICOM Observer team was of the unshakable belief that the people of Guyana expressed their will at the ballot box on March 2nd, and that the results of the recount, certified as valid by the staff of the Guyana Elections Commission, led to an orderly conclusion on which the declaration of the results of the election could and would be made. Therefore, we must ask, on what grounds and by what form of executive fiat does the chief elections officer determine that he should invalidate one vote, far less over 115,000 votes, when the votes were already certified as valid by the officers of the Guyana Elections Commission in the presence of the said political parties? We must remind all that if there is any evidence of fraudulent or improper conduct, then there is a clear and well-accepted route to deal with these matters. It is through an election petition to an election court. Any attempt to provide numbers different from those certified by the staff of the Guyana Elections Commission has left many in shock and wondering what next will happen to frustrate the will of the Guyanese people.
Barbados' Prime Minister and the chair of CARICOM, Mia Motley. So what's really going on in Guyana? That is what we seek to find out on today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Joining us via Zoom from Georgetown, Prime Minister Moses Nagamutu of the ruling party in Guyana, the alliance between a Partnership for National Unity and the Alliance for Change, better known as APNU. Representing the opposition People's Progressive Party Civic, we have Gail Teixeira. She will take first strike, but around 11:30, she'll be replaced by someone else on the panel. Political scientist Peter Wickham, who has been polling in Guyana over the years. And we are also joined by a journalist in Guyana, Dennis Jabral. But before we hear from them, we go to economist at the University of Guyana, Dr. Thomas Singh. In a pre-recorded interview, he observed that Guyana's discovery of oil is, in his view, going to make the state more dominant in the economy. And that in turn has apparently raised the stakes in the March 2nd poll.
I think the big worry that we have is the potential of economic sanctions against Guyana because of the political impasse. And of course, the bad relations that we'll have with the rest of the world unless this thing is resolved favorably. I mean, the in my mind at any rate, the recollection of what Guyana used to be when it was the pariah of the Caribbean because of our poor governance, that recollection worries me immensely, because as an economist, I see ourselves, if we get isolated from the rest of the world, being unable to even access credit. You know, that was one of our problems in the past. We were unable to access credit because we had isolated ourselves as an economy from the rest of the world. One of the things that sanctions will do is that it would probably lead to the oil revenues being inaccessible to the government of Guyana. All our oil revenues are being deposited in the New York Federal Reserve Bank. If there are sanctions, Guyana will not have access to those revenues. So if you imagine this for a moment, we isolate ourselves, we willingly accept sanctions, we therefore become unable to access capital and credit, and we're not generating much locally. What we would have generated would have been the oil revenues, but those are now inaccessible because of the sanctions if they were to kick in. And you see an economy that is suddenly going to move from having robust growth to one that in paper terms would be growing because we're exporting oil, but as far as the economic benefits of those revenues go, they're unavailable to us. So our economy is suddenly going to be shrinking. And I would attribute that to any sanctions, or I would attribute any sanctions to the political impasse.
Who do you fear most when it comes to the question of sanctions?
Well, it's natural. I mean, you know, all the oil revenues, the revenues from royalties, from the sale of the oil, they're being deposited in the New York Federal Reserve Bank. So I would imagine that if there are sanctions emanating from the United States, it would first of all apply to those revenues. And that's the biggest concern that we ought to have, in my view. Because if indeed the rest of the economy begins to fold up, the way we predict, you know, the way it is predictable, not because of the politics, but because of the economics of oil, there's this so-called Dutch disease phenomenon that happens. Trinidad experienced it, where oil dominates the economy and our traditional exports they lose competitiveness. So with oil dominating our economy, but those oil revenues being inaccessible because they're being deposited in the New York Fed, I would say that I would fear most of all, or be concerned most about, our inability to access those oil revenues. So I'm talking about the United States, clearly.
Any other major concerns that you may have coming out of this situation?
Yeah, I was about to say that I cannot ignore CARICOM in this story, even of our economic well-being. It disturbs me immensely that persons have actually, and significant, you know, significant players have actually said that we can do without CARICOM. I'm reminded of the times when Guyana went down this route. This was a time of federation, for example. For me, it is a backward thing to do, to imagine that we could, because we might have some oil revenues, that we could say to CARICOM, that we are willing to walk away. That has very unfortunate implications, obviously for international relations, regional relations, but I think it would be remiss of me not to point out that there are significant economic implications as well if we were to walk away. CARICOM, we've been part of negotiations, economic negotiations, like trade negotiations, as part of CARICOM. There's so many areas of functional cooperation that have significant economics and social significance for Guyana that are embedded in our relationship with CARICOM. That worries me too.
Whose voices are being added to that call?
Which call, might I ask?
The call to do away with the relationship with CARICOM.
Oh, well, the person I was thinking particularly about, they're the politicians, mind you. But the one that, the voice that worried me was a Labour leader. A friend of mine, in fact, his name is Lincoln Lewis. And he writes in the newspapers. Both, he has a column as well, he has as well as letters. And Lincoln has been quite clear on this matter, that we have gone down the path before of being threatened with expulsion from CARICOM, and it doesn't bother him, and it shouldn't bother us. Now, Lincoln is a Labour leader, and Lincoln knows very well, I shouldn't personalize it, but I think he typifies those non-politician, non-partisan, well, he's partisan, but you know, those persons who are not involved in the political fray right now. He represents them. And he represents a significant number of people who are willing to risk walking away from CARICOM. And I don't think that that is in any way defensible.
What would Guyana have to lose if it did walk away from CARICOM?
Guyana will lose, perhaps most particularly, the benefits it has had from the movement of skills. You know, Guyanese, of course, have worked abroad in CARICOM, and we could have only done that because of our membership in CARICOM. But if you remember well, since the oil discovery, Guyana, a country with a paucity of skills in oil matters, has been getting a lot of support from, or a lot of interest from, Trinidad and Tobago, our neighboring country that has a tremendous amount of experience in oil. For me, that sort of thing, the human capital losses that we'll have if we were to walk away, are going to be the most significant ones. Then, of course, we're part of an architecture of negotiations. You know, CARICOM negotiates on behalf of all of its members everything. Well, I shouldn't say that, that's loosely speaking. But most international agreements, be it the partnership with the European Union or, you know, the details of our relationship with the World Trade Organization and several other things, even our relations with the WHO, all of these things happen to benefit significantly from functional cooperation at the level of CARICOM. Beyond that as well, we'll be losing goodwill from CARICOM. And I can say this as an economist who's been teaching at the University of Guyana. It's always more than a pleasure when CARICOM students are in my class. The level of discourse becomes different. You know, we'll be losing the benefits of opening ourselves to the wider Caribbean region in terms of the thinking of people, in terms of the institutional advances in other countries, and in terms of the diversity. Now, I say that not thinking social diversity only and cultural diversity, but I'm thinking here that our economic space in Guyana is going to be reducing rapidly to oil and only oil. If we were to maintain some relationship with CARICOM, then even this reality of an undiversified economy that is wholly dependent on oil might be better mitigated if we were to remain a partner in CARICOM.
That's Guyanese economist Dr. Thomas Singh. And we are seeking to understand what's really going on in Guyana after their national and regional elections on March the 2nd. We hear from the panelists. We come next to Gail Teixeira of the opposition PPP Civic. Ms. Teixeira, this matter has gone to court, the matter of the outcome of the elections on March the 2nd has gone to court on a number of occasions since then, leading us now to the Caribbean Court of Justice. Explain for people who have been a little confused about what's been going on, what have been the issues that have gone to court so far? This is Down to Brass Tacks, and we are looking at the situation in Guyana at the moment. We're trying to make a connection here with Gail Teixeira. We have on Zoom Gail Teixeira, Peter Wickham, Moses Nagamutu, and journalist Dennis Chabral. And we are trying to establish a connection with them all because they seem to be having some difficulty hearing us at the moment. But in all of this, we are trying our best to try to get an understanding of exactly what has been happening in Guyana in the period between March 2nd and now. We have had bits and pieces of information that have been coming to us in the media, but what is really required here is that we get as comprehensive an understanding of what the major issues are. So that is what we are seeking to achieve in bringing this particular panel together. If you're listening to us in Barbados and outside, you will also have the opportunity to participate in the discussion. The ultimate objective is to understand exactly what the major issues are. So while we seek to correct the technical issues that are confronting us, because that is something that we would have to be working on to see if we can sort it out as quickly as possible. In the meantime, you can call us at 434-1790, the normal number for you to call here on Down to Brass Tacks. I anticipate that the Guyana situation will dominate up until about 12:30 or so, but we are still going to be open to the discussion of other issues here with us, with you rather. Down to Brass Tacks. Let's see if we can take a call, 434-1790. In the meantime, I think perhaps what we should do is go to a bed of music and sort matters out.
Hello.
Yes. You're there?
I'm here. Yes, I'm there.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis, good morning to you.
Yes, ma'am.
I am so pleased that you're dealing with this. And I look at the lineup, and to me it seems like it's 3-1.
All right. Okay.
Three persons for PPP against
one. All right.
But
look.
Let me give you my...
Look. Please.
Can I just respond to what you laid out this morning?
Yes.
First of all, the question of the votes. I want it to be known that the PPP has never countered the argument that there were irregularities and anomalies in these boxes, number one. Number two, the CARICOM Observer report did state there are irregularities and anomalies. But the results was reasonably credible. No one selects the winner of an election based on reasonably credible and not credible. That's number two. If there are irregularities and anomalies, those have to be taken into consideration. Three, Ms. Motley stated that she couldn't understand how the chief election officer could make this determination and invalidated over 115,000 votes, since the votes were counted and certified as valid by officers of the GCOM, the Guyana Election Commission, in the presence of the political parties. That's a direct quote. But that is not true, what Ms. Motley said, because I've done my research over the weekend. What you would have found is the persons who were observers there, and one of them was Captain Daniel C. Ram, observer for the APNU, stated that in each region, for example, in the first region, when they opened the boxes in region one, they found that the plastic seal of the ballot boxes were broken, the wire seals were not there or they were also broken, and this was recorded in the observation report that was found in those boxes. Then when they gone into the regions and they were checking these boxes, they discover the irregularities, such as persons who were voted that were on names that were dead, persons who were voted that were persons who would have migrated and not been present, persons who were voted on affidavits that were not signed, the persons who were voted that you could not reconcile the vote, the ballot cast, with any supporting document, boxes that were found stuffed with ballot boxes that were in excess of the persons on the list to vote. So more votes in the boxes than persons that were on the list to vote.
Let me see if we can make a connection with Guyana right now. Dennis Chabral, I believe you are hearing us well. You need to unmute your mic.
So that, yes.
Okay.
Good morning, everyone.
Yes, so we've got you. Peter Wickham, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
And what is the situation with you, Moses Nagamutu?
I'm here.
You're there as well. Gail Tashira, I think you have to unmute your mic so that we'll be able to hear you. But Dennis, give us a sense of what has been happening in Guyana since March the 2nd with all the court action that has been taken. What are the common issues here?
Well, I think this situation really goes as far back as December of 2018 with the passage of the no confidence motion. And going back as far then, the country has basically been at the political and economic standstill because, coming out of that no confidence motion, ultimately we went to the domestic courts and to the CCJ. And eventually a date was called for election, and now the elections have been held. And we are pretty much in no man's land as regards election results. Both sides are claiming victory. On the one hand, the coalition has not disclosed its statements of polls showing the figures that it has, while the PPP has provided its figures. And we are seeing the figures matching from the recount with those of the statements of poll that were counted shortly after polling day. Now we are hearing about the whole question of what constitutes a valid vote. On the one hand, I think the Representation of the People Act specifically states what is a rejected ballot and what is a valid vote. But when one looks at the stipulations in the recount order that facilitated the CARICOM scrutinized recount, there are question marks about what really is a valid vote when you have to deal with allegations of impersonation. Some are founded, some probably are unfounded. We are seeing people coming forward and saying, well, they were in Guyana, but the chief immigration officer says we weren't in Guyana. So what do you do in a situation like that? Then the whole question goes to whether indeed these issues should be dealt with in an elections commission. So we are in a political logjam for all intents and purposes. And one hopes that by the end of this week, that the Caribbean Court of Justice can bring a resolution to what is for all intents and purposes a situation that is battering the country economically, socially, and politically.
This when you say it has affected the country economically, when I spoke with the economist, he said it was difficult to distinguish what damage was done by the politics and what was done by COVID, because Guyana has also been in lockdown during this period. Isn't that correct?
Yes, there is a convergence of the two, but because government is a key provider as far as disbursement of resources is concerned for contracts and all of that, there is generally a trickle down. But if you do not have that source of revenue going into the economy, then it will compound the situation whereby government itself is in a situation where it is not generating the kind of revenue that it ought to generate. Tourism, although it's a fledgling sector, has been bringing in people. All of the major hotels are virtually closed. I think one or two hotels may be used by the expatriate community, the oil sector, as quarantine facilities. But the economy is in fact taking a battery. Contractors are not being paid on a timely basis, if at all, in many instances, because government, which has the resources, is virtually broke. The president said so a few weeks ago, where they really need money to do things. But all of this is caught up in the politics of the country. Even the country itself, the government itself, trying to grapple with the coronavirus and so on, is really taking a toll on everyone.
Prime Minister Moses Nagamutu, give us a sense of how your ruling alliance is seeing this issue. And explain for people in a little bit of detail this whole confusion about votes, valid votes and not so valid votes, because a lot of people outside of Ghana don't understand exactly what your constitution says about it. And sometimes when you listen to what is said in the courts, it is strung in legalese to the point where you can be lost. So explain this in simple terms for us.
Right. As you know, legal issues are not so easy to explain in simple terms. David, I want to say hello to all my colleagues who are on the program, Peter, Dave, Dennis, and Gail. I want to say from the outset, before I address the issue you asked me, David, that I want to thank all the observers who have come to Guyana, including the three scrutineers. I agree with Prime Minister Mia Motley that they did so at the risk of their own safety, and they participated in the project as brothers and sisters, as we are in the Caribbean. A view was expressed that the situation in Guyana might imperil our relationship with CARICOM. I don't see that happening, and in any case, I don't think that could or should ever happen, because the CARICOM is a geographic, a historical frontier of Guyana. The headquarters of CARICOM is in Guyana. We have been a part of the founding of the Caribbean community, and we all benefit mutually from relationships of interrelationship and trade and movement of skills. All of us benefit from the advantage of being in a union, a common union. And therefore, I would want to see a Guyana being very much part of this Caribbean, to which we are linked by blood, we are linked by ancestry, we are linked by other things like cricket, culture, even curry, calypso, carnival, all diseases you can think about. So I think that is, in my mind, one of the most important issues that we should focus on. And I think that Thomas Singh has brought that out, and we need to keep that in focus. However, oil has brought some new challenges, like you opened the window for fresh air, it brought in some flies. And so a lot of extraneous interests are now floating up, geopolitical strategic interests. So these have complicated the situation in Guyana. Not recently, there is a background to some of these. We have had the intrusion by invitation of groups such as Cambridge Analytica and Mercury, which have been tainted with interfering in the internal affairs of other countries and using data manipulation to determine how the outcomes of elections ought to be. And these have been exposed extensively, even in the United States and in UK during the 26 US elections and in the Brexit referendum. But to come back to what you have said, Peter, I just want to give that as a background, that one cannot use lightly the word sanction without looking at the geopolitical situation, because no country benefits if a bigger country decide that it will jackboot in its territory and will dictate what should happen in sovereign countries using the threat of sanctions. So you don't want to go there either, but you have to analyze, why are these threats being made on Guyana now? Why is this knee being put on the neck of the people of Guyana at this point in time to stop us from breathing. So we have to go deeper into historical reasons as well as current temptations that outside forces see themselves as part and parcel of the destiny of the country from which they could benefit immediately.
But I still want you to get down into the nitty-gritty of these issues yes. that have gone before the courts so that people can understand
right.
what
so
that's all about.
The law around which the declaration of results should be guided states that there should be valid votes accounted for in an election. And the question was, what does that mean in terms of the Constitution? So a citizen went to the Court of Appeal and asked the Court of Appeal to interpret the Constitution in regards to what it would take for someone to emerge a president, for example, to emerge as president, elected president. And the Court of Appeal ruled that the interpretation to the votes cast should mean valid votes cast, meaning someone emerging as a president should have more valid votes cast in the election than any other of the rivals or competitors or contestant. And the Court of Appeal, having made that ruling, the opposition, the main opposition, the PPP, and other opposition parties, some of which mushroomed during the elections, they have appealed the matter to the Caribbean Court of Justice. Caribbean Court of Justice would begin hearing this matter, as you said, on Wednesday. It's now receiving submissions. And they are saying basically that the Guyana Court of Appeal has no jurisdiction. It has no right. It has no legal right to make that interpretation. And that is where I believe that it is a strange phenomenon has developed, that you would want to go into a cricket match and you bowl 9 deliveries, but 3 could be no balls and 1 could be a wide. And so they are not counted as valid deliveries. And that is what is in simple layman's term is taking place here, that you have a race where one contender declared even before the official results have been out that they're the winner and circulated what they claim to be the tabulation they have made of the votes and asking the governing party to release its votes. The law forbids that. Only the Guyana Elections Commission can release the results of an election, not a political party, not an organization and their backers trying to prejudice the outcome of an election. So that is where we have been since 2018, as Dennis said. We have gone through a cycle of legal challenges, first from the no confidence motion, then other challenges dealing with house-to-house registration of voters. And then also when the counting took place, there was a challenge to block the declaration of the first count, which showed the APNU-AFC winning those elections. And that was not allowed to happen. Then after that, you have new cycle of a fresh wave of litigation. So what has taken place in Guyana has to be looked at as what Prime Minister Mia Mottley has said quite correctly, that an election is not a single event. It is a process. And we have gone through a process since the March 2nd, and we had a count, and it was subject to questions, and you had a recount, which lasted for 33 days in a difficult situation of having a COVID, this social distancing to maintain and other restrictive measures. But that took place, and there was a tabulation of the raw ballots, which then had to be subjected to reports dealing with observations of thousands and thousands of irregularities, of no balls, of whites, votes that could not be considered valid. So in an election, you're looking for valid votes, but you're also looking for credible elections. And a credible outcome of elections can only be determined by what by eliminating votes that ought not to be counted. There were ballot boxes where there were no official records as to how many people came to that polling station, how many actually voted. What happened to those records? What happened to the number of persons who have migrated and who have died, and ostensibly people voted in their place? The dead voted. So that it's a difficult situation when you have a population of 750,000 persons and you have a padded voters list of 661,000, and you have 200,000 persons below the age of 16 still okay. in school.
So let me
have a voter list which was exploited to bring up, and therefore one would have thought that the elections would have been vitiated or nullified, or at least the Elections Commission has to decide how to treat the votes that were compromised.
Okay, Prime Minister Moses Nagamutu, let me hear from Gail Tashira of the opposition PPP Civic. What is your party's view on what has been happening, Ms. Tashira? Justin, you need to turn on your microphone. Yes.
Yes. Good morning to all your viewers and listeners, and thank you for allowing us to have this opportunity to be on your program, sir. I have listened to the Prime Minister, and I want to clarify for your viewers that what has happened in Guyana has to do with democracy. All of what the Prime Minister is talking about, and the de facto Prime Minister, is that a lot of fluff. The issues are very clear, and I don't wish to be rude on your program, sir. On March the 2nd, after waiting 14 months following a no-confidence motion that succeeded in the National Assembly of Guyana, and in violation of the Constitution that said the election should have been held 3 months after that, 14 months after we went to the polls, and on March the 2nd, the Guyanese people voted peacefully, innocently, freely, and fairly. On the night of March the 2nd, we count our votes at the place of poll. And all 2,339 polling stations did that. And the copies of the statement of poll were signed by the polling agents of all the political parties present. The two main political parties, the PVPC and the APNU AFC, had agents at all the stations. And so these were signed. Now, the counting of the place of the ballots goes on from what takes place that day. And that a copy is placed on the outer building or the wall of the outer building of the polling station. The political parties have copies of the statements of poll. Between March the 2nd and the 5th, the 9 of the 10 electoral districts tabulated those statements of poll. And the People's Progressive Party Civic had 52,000 votes in advance of the APNU AFC. On the 4th and 5th, then they started dealing with the 10th electoral district, which is called Region 4. And that is when some rather odd things started to happen. In the midst of having used almost half of the statements of poll for the region, the returning officers suddenly switched to a spreadsheet, which the counting agents for the political parties, that is the parties in opposition to the government, which were 9, recognized that the numbers weren't matching. There was an approach to the court which gave an injunction to the returning officer and GCOM to not declare the results. The chief elections officer took those fraudulent results from the returning officer and presented to the GCOM, but the injunction stopped him. Those results that he had suddenly produced a win for the APNU AFC, with 20,000 votes more than were actually counted in the 10 region, and reducing the votes by over 3,000 in the People's Progressive Party. So that was the first issue. Then the whole court ruled that the returning officer must use the statements of poll. We went back, and a long story of what happened. On March the 13th, again, the chief elections officer, using the fraudulent figures, again produced another set of figures to show that APNU AFC won. The CARICOM got involved, and Madam Mia Motley came with four heads of government on the invitation of Mr. Granger. The leading opposition, Mr. Jagdeo, agreed to the recount, and they signed an aid memoir on March the 16th. On March the 17th, an APNU candidate, a candidate of Mr. Nagamutu's party, went to the court to stop the recount. The CARICOM team returned back home. Again, a whole process went through the courts, and the court could not stop the recount. And so it restarted on May the 6th with the return of the CARICOM observer team. We recounted every single one of those 2,339 ballot boxes. Each one had a statement to recount. Each one went through all of them. Now, the recount was a recount. It was never meant to be an audit, which is something different. However, at the end of the process on June the 9th, there was 10 certified copies of the statement of recount, and also 10 for regional and 10 for general, signed by the political parties, except for APNU, which signed in one statement to poll, one statement of recount. And so on every afternoon, sir, the people of Guyana looked on their television screens and saw the tabulation of each ballot box in front of their eyes. So that each day, at the end of the day, there was a tabulation of the ballot boxes done in each one of those stations. And so at the end of that all, 233,336 votes went to the People's Progressive Party Civic, and 217,720 for the APNUFC. The PPPC had won the second time round with 15,416 votes. Following that, the chairman of GCOM called on the elections officer, chief elections officer, to produce the results, to declare, to send her the results based on the certified recount. Instead of doing that, he submitted a different report in which he accepted that there were statements to recount, and he did reflect that. However, he went into mathematical wizardry, and suddenly threw out 275,000 voters from the 460,000 that had voted, and then declared APNU winning with 125,000 votes and the PPP in the opposition with 56,000 votes. During the recount, APNU made a number of their agents in the recount, made a number of objections. All of them were unproved. Not one shred of evidence to prove what they were trying to make at each ballot box. Furthermore, the chairman of the Elections Commission made it absolutely clear that the Elections Commission does not have the powers of investigation or of a court. Any concerns relating to the elections and the credibility of the elections comes afterwards in the election petition. And therefore, she was dealing what was a mathematical process, and that is the tabulation of the certified recount, statements of recount. Mr. Lowenfield, having done this mathematical wizardry, the matter then, the APNU, again with another candidate, went to the court. And the Court of Appeal is the matter now that is brought to the CCJ. The Court of Appeal, very strangely, made an amendment to the Constitution, which it doesn't have powers to. And it stated that more votes cast meant more valid votes. However, in their ruling, they did not authorize the chief elections officer to determine on his own, by his own fiat, what was a valid or invalid vote. He has no such power, nor does the commission, nor does a president or a minister. It is solely in the remit of the High Court of Guyana with an election petition. So when the Court of Appeal, by a majority decision, decided that, Mr. Lowenfield, within 12 hours and during a stay of execution by the Court of Appeal and the the Caribbean Court of Justice, produced another set of figures. And these showed that 115,000 people, he reduced magically the 275,000 votes which he disenfranchised on June the 13th. 10 days later, he disenfranchised, he reduced that to 115,000 approximate votes. There is no provision in law or the Constitution to allow for the chief elections officer, or in fact anybody in the commission or elsewhere to change the results of the ballots that were certified in the recount on June the 9th and completed by June the 9th. And so the issue here is, put aside what Mr. Nagamuchu said, the real issue is that parliamentary democracy, as we know it, if the APNU-AFC cabal with Lowenfield gets through with this, that we will become a rogue state in the Caribbean and in CARICOM, because we would have defiled the democratic principles upon which our constitution and laws are based on.
Okay, I want to hear from Peter Wickham.
The last word is that the issue is the vote of every voter in Guyana who voted on March the 2nd must count. Any questions have to go to election petition. And we're waiting 119 days for the results.
That's Gail Teixeira. Now, let me come back to you, Moses Nagamuchu, just before I go to Peter Wickham, because she has said quite a bit, and that deserves a response from you.
Yes, David, positively. I feel that what Mrs. Gail Teixeira has said just now is very outrageous. When she said that the Court of Appeal has amended the Constitution, how could you make such an outrageous statement? It is clearly stated in the Constitution of Guyana that where there are two or more candidates in an election, if more votes are cast in favor of one candidate, that's a candidate party, as against the other, then that would be the basis for a declaration of the election of a president. But it has to be done by the chairman of the Elections Commission, an announcement of the election, acting only in accordance with the advice of the chief elections officer, after which such advice has been tendered to the Elections Commission at the duly summoned meeting. The chief elections officer was instructed to prepare a report of the outcome of the elections under a section of the law of Guyana that requires the declaration of valid votes. That is section 96 of the Representation of the People Act. It was not done at the caprice, arbitrarily at the will and whimsical fancies of the chief elections officer. So the elections, the Court of Appeal under the Constitution, which gives it the jurisdiction to hear a narrow number of issues and to render interpretation, gave an interpretation that where it's stated that if more votes are cast for one side as against the other, it means more valid votes. Now, I've heard the leader of the opposition at a press conference saying, we accept that because votes have to be valid if they are to be counted. So that should not be an area of contestation, should not be an area of disputation. It should not be the occasion to impugn the Court of Appeal of Guyana with having committed an amendment of the Constitution. That's a serious allegation to make on the eve of the Caribbean Court of Justice listening to an appeal coming from the PPP, which now seems to have backtracked on his commitment to valid votes to mean any votes, anything, no ball and white ball and bouncers are all valid in this this equation. So what has happened there when we were told that votes were declared? There has been no declaration of an official results. I agree. The time spoken, Gail and I have gone back a very long time. First met her in 1976. This is my 12th elections. I have seen them all. I have been there. I have seen elections that where valid votes were not counted in the past. And strangely now I've seen this is what seemed to be the advocacy of the PPP to count every vote. She herself mentioned about objections that remained during the recount process. Now, there was a recount that was ordered after consultation among the Elections Commission Chairman, the CARICOM, the leader of the opposition and the president. There was consensus on what the order should be that should guide the recount. And the order stipulates four stages: the actual recount of the ballots, a report that would be based on the tabulation of the recount, then a review based on observations that have been made, that is, those allegations of voter impersonation, and on a wide scale, people voted for people who have migrated and who have died, etc., and the missing book. Those tabulation would be impacted by the observation. That's the review stage. The last stage is the results being announced by the Elections Commission. So we have been in the third stage of the review, and it is the chief elections officer on whose advice, and only on whose advice, the chairman of the Elections Commission should act. He submitted the report to show how the fraud had impacted on the ballots in the tabulation, and then he came out with figures that he considered to be valid vote.
Okay.
I want to question the chief elections officer. The Constitution gives him some certain powers. Maybe
the Constitution gives Mr. Lowenfield no such powers.
Well, let me say to you both that Peter Wickham, when we listen to both the PPP and APNU, we hear allegations of fraud from both sides, and this raises the question of really where Guyana has gone, because over the years we have heard this going way back into the 70s. And from where you sit, how serious an issue is this in Guyana's politics right now? And to what extent has that helped to create this very confusing situation that we see before us today? Peter Wickham?
Oh, no, sorry, I thought that question is really one for Moses.
Well, I wanted to hear from you as the observer, because you have also been doing your polling, and you've had a presence in Guyana as a political scientist for years. So yeah, I want to get your perspective on it.
No, I mean, even before I was active, because I was only active for the last 20 years.
But that's a long time.
the stories of electoral challenges regarding the robustness of data that's produced in Guyana elections goes back. It goes back to the PNC era, when the overseas vote was a big factor that was counted, and it was not easily determined. I mean, I don't know whether Moses will remember that era. And even there was a period of time where we used to look at electoral data.
We
used to look at electoral data in Guyana as starting like in the 90s, because there were all of these challenges associated with the data of that era. And the sad reality is that, you know, the data coming out of that era, the partner was your organization, Moses, your partner organization, which is the PNC. So there's a team that Guyana has carried regarding, especially.
But is that one-sided? Are the allegations directed only at the PNC only?
There have been concerns that have been raised in more recent times, but I do feel that the history of it is rooted in an era where the greater challenges were PNC challenges. I've heard issues raised with the management of elections based on PPP Civic, but I do feel that those were... The challenge now is that it is harder to cheat in an election now than it was years ago. And that's the simple reality that we have to come back to. Things that you could do years ago, you can't do now, because you have cell phones, you have, you know, the level of transparency. And the other thing is that Guyana has made significant changes to the way that their electoral system works. They have entrenched the role of observers, which I think is great, because it gives us an opportunity to have a third eye on what's going on locally. So technically speaking, their system is one of the more robust ones, because they have had a longer history and they've made changes that respond directly to that. The idea of having the statement of polls principle, where everyone signs and then there is a dot posted on the outside of the polling station, and then that information is relayed to Georgetown. I mean, it seems to the logical person the easiest way to ensure a level of transparency. What I'm confounded by to this day is how exactly do you get a situation where the documents that are posted on the wall do not match the information that's in the spreadsheet? And we cannot get to a situation where GCOM is willing to provide information and show us the statement of polls that they use to construct the spreadsheet. And to be perfectly honest, if they did that, and I'm not saying that APNU has to do it, I'm not saying that PNC has to do it, PPP, I'm saying that if GCOM were willing to say, okay, these are the spreadsheets that support these are the statement of polls that support the spreadsheet, this is what we use to compile, then we wouldn't be having all of this discussion now. But the challenge is that everyone else seems to have a different version of what was supposed to be in those statement of polls, and it corresponds with what was in the statement of recall. So I think that one of the main issues that the PPP APNU has to explain is how do we get from what was on the wall and people caught on cell phones or whatnot to what was presented in that spreadsheet. The other issue I think that they need to stop talking about Cambridge Analytica and these conspiracy theories. I mean, they're forgetting conveniently that they just recently hired this JJB organization to lobby in the United States of America. And I'm not understanding why that's an issue. To me, that's a red herring. What I think is the greater concern, and Mr. Nagamutu has to appreciate this, you're isolating yourself locally, you're isolating yourself regionally, and you're isolating yourself internationally. And my thing is that if perchance you decided to declare the winner, certainly President Granger, Guyana will have extreme difficulties operating in this environment going forward. Because the reality is that legitimacy doesn't really come from you. Legitimacy comes from your local population that recognizes that you're legitimate, and then your partners that you will work with regionally and internationally. That's one of the main principles of international law.
What makes you believe that they will have such a hard time regionally?
Because most of the regional heads that have spoken on the issue have already said, because there is a document, a statement of recognition in the public domain.
But they would have to sanction. Move in the direction of sanctioning Guyana.
I'm not talking about sanctions. I'm just saying that recognizing legitimacy, I'm not dealing with sanctions at all. I'm just saying that the question of legitimacy will come from an appreciation. And I think that in the local domestic domain, most people see the statement of recount as a reflection of what happened in the election. Regionally and internationally, that's also the case, because everyone that has spoken on it has said that. And up to now, I have not heard a single regional or international head speak to it and said that they believe that the outcome is more truly reflected in what the chief elections officer has given as distinct from what the statement of polls.
You put a lot of responsibility on the ruling alliance, and you've identified what you see as their challenges and their weaknesses. But what about the PPP Civic? What is your assessment of where they have gone wrong in all of this, if at all?
I don't. But where have the PPP Civic gone wrong? PPP participated in an election, and they clearly seem to have won. So I'm agonizing over, what exactly it is that we expect the PPP Civic to do, other than to fight for what they believe to be correct under the circumstances. This whole question of the valid vote thing. I do feel that this is probably an area where we can have some kind of a logical discussion. Because to me, what the, this is probably the only point I would disagree with Gail on, that I don't know that the appeal court changed the constitution. What the appeal court has done is that they have declared the obvious, that valid vote means valid vote. And valid vote means credible vote. I mean, that's perfectly logical. So I don't have a difficulty with the court saying the obvious. What I think we are misunderstanding is that there is a belief that the appeal court has said that valid vote means valid as determined by Loenfield and Mingo. And I don't think that's what the court intended to do. The court intended to say valid and credible vote, because for a person to get a vote into the ballot box, there's a process. You have to go in, you have to register your name, you have scrutineers from both sides. So perhaps Mr. Nagamutu can tell me what his scrutineers were doing when 115,000 votes managed to get into the ballot box, because they would have had APNU scrutineers there as well, right? What happened to the electoral ink? For a person to vote twice in Guyana, you have to have your finger in the electoral ink. So maybe you had people voting with all different fingers, all 10 fingers, and not inking them. Or alternatively, the electoral ink, was it being washed off? You know, but This is the reason why the process of determining validity outside of what is normal and natural, where you have a person coming in and there's a scrutineer, they're present to see that nothing goes wrong, is determined by an electoral court, because there's no way that in the course of a recount you can assess all of those kinds of issues where suggestions are made that things went wrong. And I feel that it's fascinating to me that normally the agency that runs the election is the one that robustly defends the integrity of it. And here we are having an agency that ran the election and say, look, we ran this election, but clearly we dropped the ball because 115,000 people were able to get votes into the ballot boxes. And we as a supervising agency know nothing about that. So we're going to say, just throw out the boxes. Okay. That's the thing I'm having some challenges with. And then the final thing is this thing about the padded list. And I mean, Mr. Nagamutu, take a look at the electoral list in Barbados. Take a look at the one in Trinidad and Tobago. Take a look at the one in St. Kitts. All of them are padded. So it is nothing unusual that you have almost the same number of people on the list as in your population, because that's exactly the same situation in Barbados. The key thing is that having a person's name on a list does not mean that that person votes. And that's the critical thing that has to be determined. Did those persons vote that were dead? And if so, how do you go about proving that and having those persons' votes thrown out? And I think that the electoral court is the appropriate way to go.
Okay. Thank you, Peter Wickham.